Writing over a decade ago in Color Lines, in an article entitled "The Radioactive Racism Behind Nuclear Energy," Michelle Chen points out that when the apocalyptic cloud erupted over Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the world woke up to the dawn of the nuclear age. Today, if we surveyed the landscape of nuclear development across the planet, we see that the destructive impacts of the technology are often paired with the dehumanizing impacts of environmental racism. This is Patricia Kullberg, and I will be drawing this morning on a number of sources to amplify the point that Michelle Chen makes. She goes on to say that at every point in the nuclear production chain, the industry has sloughed a disproportionate share of the risk onto marginalized communities, from Native peoples in the Southwest United States to the Australian outback. While the rest of the world hums along with nuclear power, many of these communities have fought a losing battle against the standard corporate line that technological advancements have led to seamless safety. She quotes Jim Green of Friends of the Earth Australia, who states that globally, the nuclear industry profits from and reinforces racism. Backed by its political partners, the industry forces uranium mines, nuclear reactors, radioactive waste dumps, and weapons tests on to the land of indigenous peoples. Chen continues, the core of today's nuclear crisis lies in the gears of global capitalism. After a long chill following the disasters in Chernobyl and Three Mile Island, governments have in recent years responded to climate change issues by rebranding nuclear as a fossil fuel alternative. But if safety in the nuclear age can't be guaranteed for all, Chen concludes, the industry and its friends in government can always try a more efficient method of managing risk, confine the danger zone to the populations they see as less worthy of protection. That was an excerpt from an article by Michelle Chen in Color Lines entitled "The Radioactive Racism Behind Nuclear Energy." Last year, a group of nuclear scientists elaborated further how racism and colonialism have been embedded in the nuclear sector since the get-go. They published an article in the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists entitled, "A Call for Anti-Racist Action and Accountability in the U.S. Nuclear Community." When it comes to nuclear proliferation and nuclear waste, these scholars argued that the history, logics, and culture of the industry produce and sustain racial hierarchy. Accountability, they go on, starts with understanding how the field normalized colonialist dehumanization, erasure, and exploitation of people of color. The history was conceived on the idea that a dominant set of cultural and behavioral norms, namely the norms of the white, Western, and Christian colonial powers, were the correct ones to live by, that minorities should strive to assimilate to these norms in order to be granted full participation and citizenship in society. These norms, politics, and attitudes were ingrained from the outset within the research practices, policies, legal frameworks, and culture of the nuclear industry. For example, the Manhattan Project, the largest united scientific undertaking of its time, created many of its production facilities by displacing vulnerable minority communities, often without compensation. Many such U.S. nuclear facilities, particularly those for the weapons program, were built without consent on indigenous land, displacing or poisoning those who lived in the vicinity. The women who worked on uranium enrichment at what would become Oak Ridge National Lab were forced to keep the color line. Black women lived in racially segregated facilities and generally had lower paying jobs at the facility than whites. During the Trinity test, the United States detonated the world's first weapon of mass destruction on land bordering the Mescalero Apache Reservation in New Mexico. and the language and rhetoric around the nuclear detonations at Hiroshima and Nagasaki in Japan were steeped in racist and dehumanizing ideas about Japanese people and culture. That was an excerpt from an article in the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists by Caitlin Turner, Lauren Borgia, Dania Dijokic, Madigan Monk, and Aditi Verma. In their own words, Hoodwinked in the Hothouse is a concise yet comprehensive compendium of the false corporate promises that continue to hoodwink elected officials and the public, leading us down risky pathways poised to waste billions of public dollars on a host of corporate snake oil schemes and market-based mechanisms. The work is authored by grassroots organizers, movement strategists, and thought leaders from across our climate and environmental justice movements. Here's some of what they have to say about the environmental racism of nuclear waste. On the following recording, you will hear the voice of Hannah Smay of the Nuclear Information and Resource Service.
Dirty energy companies want people to believe that nuclear power is necessary to reduce greenhouse gases and avert the climate crisis. This could not be further from the truth. Nuclear power is not a climate solution. It is too dirty, too dangerous, too expensive, and too slow. At every stage of production, it is rooted in environmental injustice and human rights violations. In the U.S., there are over 15,000 abandoned uranium mines, predominantly on indigenous lands west of the Mississippi River. These sites contaminate air, land, and drinking water, causing cancer epidemics and other diseases among indigenous peoples. Uranium enrichment and fuel fabrication plants in New Mexico, North Carolina, Ohio, Oklahoma, South Carolina, and other locations are located in predominantly Black, Indigenous, and people of color communities, and have a long track record of leaks and spills. The largest radioactive disaster in North America occurred in 1979 on the Navajo Nation. A mill tailings dam in Church Rock, New Mexico burst, dumping over 90 million gallons of uranium tailings, flooding nearby pastures and flowing more than 80 miles down the Puerco River. The radioactive and toxic waste was never cleaned up. Affected communities, including Redwater Pond Road, have suffered contamination and dislocation, despite decades of fighting for cleanup and reparations. Radioactive waste is itself another global environmental crisis, endangering water and health. The 80,000 tons of irradiated fuel at reactors in the U.S. contains enough radioactivity to make every drop of drinking water on Earth too dangerous to consume. That is only 25% of the world's total and does not include the immense volumes of uranium waste rock and mill tailings, depleted uranium, and low-level radioactive waste. There is still no solution for the waste, which will remain hazardous for over 1 million years. This is an unjust burden on future generations, a danger to ecology and health we have no right to impose. In addition, reactors release radioactive wastes into air and water as part of their normal operation. These routine releases, along with leaks and spills, contaminate surrounding communities, most of which are low wealth and rural, resulting in untold epidemics of cancer, congenital defects, and other diseases.
That was an excerpt from an audio piece by Hoodwinked in the Hothouse. All of the articles and recordings you've just heard were edited for length and clarity, and links to the originals are posted on our website at kboo.fm. I'd like to close this segment by bringing us home to the Pacific Northwest, where one of the greatest acts of colonial injustice was perpetrated right under our noses, and which leaves us today with a horrific legacy of toxic waste. I'm talking about the Hanford Project, which forcibly displaced members of the Yakima Nation in 1943 without compensation in order to produce plutonium for atomic weapons. The following radio segment was produced by Columbia Riverkeeper and features Dan Sears as its narrator. You will also hear the voices of Dennis Falk of the United States Environmental Protection Agency, Dieter Bormann from the Washington State Department of Ecology, Shelley Simon of the Hanford Advisory Board, Russell Jim of the Yakima Nation, and Liz Mattson of Hanford Challenge.
Today we'll be floating down an area of the Columbia River that's incredibly important habitat for Chinook salmon, but it's also North America's most contaminated site. This is an area that was used to make weapons-grade plutonium for decades, ever since the middle of World War II. This is the place where they made the plutonium for the Nagasaki bomb.
Now, if we don't hold the federal government accountable for nuclear waste cleanup at Hanford, the results could be catastrophic. To understand why, you're going to need a bit of history. In 1943, the federal government selected a huge area along the Columbia River as a top-secret site for the Manhattan Project to create plutonium for nuclear weapons. The government removed Native Americans who had lived along the Columbia River for centuries and evacuated the small communities of Hanford and nearby White Bluffs. Within a year, the U.S. built the world's first large-scale nuclear reactor and eventually built 9 nuclear reactors on the banks of the river to create the most destructive bombs in human history. During the rush to build bombs, the U.S. also created dangerous nuclear waste, radioactive pollution associated with cancer, genetic mutation, and other grave health effects. At the time, storing that waste in underground steel tanks might have seemed good enough. Now, as the waste eats through steel and concrete, we're left with a massive ticking time bomb, staved off only by the ongoing cleanup efforts that began in 1989.
We really didn't know what we were getting ourselves into back in 1989. The other thing that we've discovered is there was a lot more waste out there than we ever anticipated.
This is a place where Department of Energy actually stored spent nuclear fuel for years and years, and to the point where it began to degrade and break down and turn into this toxic radioactive sludge that's very close to the river. And it doesn't just stop here. What's beyond, far out of sight, miles into the Hanford area, are these huge tanks full of very highly radioactive sludge and liquid waste. And these tanks are leaking.
Time is not on our side when we're talking about these tanks aging and continuing to possibly leak into the soil.
On this pollution mapping tool released by federal scientists, you can see real-time nuclear and chemical waste data. While contaminants from the 9 reactors along the river pose the most immediate threat, the real sleeping giant rests at the center of Hanford. Here, 177 buried tanks, many as large as an Olympic swimming pool, hold some of the most dangerous pollution on Earth. Dozens of tanks already leak nuclear waste, and pollution is creeping towards the Columbia River and groundwater. We're simply running out of time. If the federal government doesn't clean up the waste, more radioactive pollution will reach the river.
I've been concerned with Hanford cleanup since I can remember because of the Columbia River. It's the lifeblood.
It's really a lifeline for the Pacific Northwest.
Of course, the mighty river, it's always been the lifeblood of the Yakima people.
It also has the best mainstem spawning habitat for Chinook salmon in the entire Columbia River system.
The salmon is one of the most important foods that we have. All the ingredients they receive out of the ocean is distributed out here for the benefit of everything.
I think about the future. I think about the fact that this is the commons. It belongs to all of us. And I think that the moral obligation is that we clean.
It's really important for people to know that the decisions that we make now about how much contamination to leave behind are going to impact future generations and the future of the site.
We're trying to convince them that if you would clean up the place to comply with the Treaty of 1855, we'd protect all future generations, not just the Yakima.
So we're going by the White Bluffs, a part of Hanford that was carved out 14,000 years ago by the Missoula floods. To give you a sense for the problems at Hanford, the half-life of plutonium is 24,000 years. So what humans have created in terms of contamination on this site will threaten the Columbia River for longer than we can really imagine.
The decisions about how much waste to clean up can have an impact 100 years down the line, 1,000 years down the line, and for some contaminants, 200,000 years down the line.
I look at White Bluffs, I look at the landscape of this area, I feel like I'm cradled in the arms of time. But what really matters is that we think about the continuum and what remains for the next generations.
You can join Columbia River Keeper and people throughout the Pacific Northwest that are standing up and demanding that the federal government clean up Hanford to protect people, to protect salmon, and to protect our river.
Our challenge is to plant our heels on the edge of the Columbia River and to make sure this site gets cleaned up so that future generations don't deal with this toxic legacy.
Thanks to Columbia Riverkeeper for that segment on the Hanford cleanup. Links to the video are posted on the Old Mole webpage at kboo.fm. This is Patricia Kullberg for the Old Mole Variety Hour.